Dr. Deb Stroman, UNC professor and longtime sports commentator, to talk not about goings on the field and on the court, but off the court with the rise in salaries for college football head coaches. And there's a lot of talk about money behind the scenes in college sports in general, but starting with college football salaries with Jimbo Fisher just taking a big, big contract to move over to Texas A&M. Deb Stroman joining us now on the air. How are you?
Doing well, Aaron. And before we shock the listening audience with the numbers, I want to just give a little background as to why these college football coaches might be considered so valuable and why they're oftentimes the highest paid employee in the state that they reside in and they work in. I would say, number one, branding. Having a top football program can set your school on the map. So not only are you noticed in New York or L.A., but in Paris and Johannesburg or Australia. Number two, I would say student experience. These young men who get the opportunity to play in these top schools, they're getting an experience, education, athletically, like a king. They get to ride in jets, fly in jets. They get to go to places they might never have been before. They get to have the opportunity of having 70,000 people or 100,000 people cheering for them. I'll say donations to other parts of the school. Oftentimes, your sport program, when winning is occurring, people will donate to the school, or the money that's raised is actually used in other parts of campus, whether that's the library or some particular academic program. It increases the number of applicants to your school. We know there are a number of mid-majors, for example, Butler. Great basketball program, and now people know Butler, so students are more inclined to possibly consider that school for their academic experience. Economic development to the local town, and of course, that's why here in Chapel Hill, we have such an engaged community in terms of Tar Heel sports and what it does for the city of Chapel Hill. And last but not least, increased diversity on campus. Some schools continue to struggle with diversity, in particular with African-American men, and there's no doubt having a number of football players on your campus, it can make it appear that you have a very diverse campus. So I'll stop there and just say that's why these numbers are outrageous.
Yeah, so they are in fact outrageous. Actually, before we get to the numbers and talk about Jimbo Fisher, I was, and I know we've talked about this before, and that you've had this on your mind for a while. We've talked about it on a couple of different occasions here in this weekly conversation. Whether it's worth it for a school to pursue big-time athletics to the point of, in this case, throwing millions or even tens of millions of dollars at a really high-profile head coach. I can think of some obvious schools where the pursuit of big-time college athletics has really paid off. Notre Dame with football has increased its reputation because it has big-time football. Duke University with basketball. Stanford wins the Learfield Director's Cup every single year, and the fact that it does that increases its public knowledge and its reputation. And then you've got the sort of more obvious negative examples. Rutgers, my alma mater for grad school, which threw tens of millions of dollars at college football that hasn't really panned out. Baylor, I think it's fair to say, sold its soul for big-time college sports, and that has, I think, long-term hurt its reputation, and that's certainly not the worst thing that's happened at Baylor because of what they've pursued in the last 10 years. But those are the more obvious examples. In general, you're just a regular school that doesn't necessarily make the headlines in a super positive or super negative way. Jimbo Fisher signing on with Texas A&M. Odds are, in your opinion, is this move to pursue a national championship in college football, to go all in on that, is that long-term? Does that tend to be a better thing for the school overall, or does it tend to be more than it's worth?
Well, I believe that if schools were already in the football game big time, maybe 20, 30 years ago, and then eventually you're in this mode of keeping up with the Joneses, mm-hmm. It's like you have to continue to do that, or you have to shut the program down and really, really de-emphasize it. And most schools are still trying to do the option of keeping up with the Joneses. Joneses, which I feel is troublesome, but it's not a terrible thing. What I find very, very almost, I can say, horrific is to take schools who really have zero history, tradition, and then they decide, look at all this money that's being floated around Division I bowl level football, and now we want to participate. And so they're going all in at the expense of the academic side of the university, and quite possibly putting additional pressure on alums that this is where you need to give versus in another area, because this will help our branding, this will help our applications and all of that. I think certain schools who've been in it for years, you have to keep up with the Joneses, or you have to make the big 360 and stop, or really, really slow it down. But for the new schools who are trying to jump into this space, it really creates a lot of tension on a college campus.
So speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman again, UNC professor, sports commentator, let's talk specifics, because we're sort of inspired by Jimbo Fisher's big old contract with Texas A&M. So what are the numbers that people want to know?
Well, this is really like dominoes. So Jimbo Fisher, no stranger to Chapel Hill. He's been at Florida State, assistant coach, now head coach. He left to become the head coach at Texas A&M, where the money flows. He signed the richest contract in college football history, a 10-year deal worth a reported $75 million. And here's the kicker. It's fully guaranteed. So we're talking about, for the 2018 season, people are thinking it's going to be about $7.5 million. It's just amazing that you have this type of money going to a coach. Less than 20 years ago, he was the quarterback's coach at Auburn, where he had a salary of $72,000. And then he went on to become the offensive coordinator at LSU, now and then Florida State, whereas as an assistant, which is another area where we have to pay attention to, these college football assistants are now making $1 million and plus. But back then at Florida State, his salary peaked at $630,000. So Fisher leaves Florida State. In comes Willie Taggart. He is a Florida native. He was at Oregon. He was only there for 1 year, but he did turn around the University of South Florida's program, and he's got a 6-year, $30 million deal.
So, again, talking about these recent contracts that have been signed, it just keeps going up and up. Is there a ceiling to this?
I think it's capitalism at its best.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if we can ever rein this in without strong, strong, bold, courageous leadership from the academic side. Now, everyone knows that the NCAA is really run by presidents, and it's run by athletic directors and people on the academic side. But because we have so many academics who don't really, and to their defense, they didn't study sport business, they aren't familiar with sport business, and they've been promoted through the academic side, being very good administrators, being great researchers and teachers, they don't necessarily understand this. And their right arm in all of this is a very crafty and knowledgeable sport business person. And oftentimes they've just been counseled to, this train has already gone down the track, and we really can't put the brakes on it. And certainly you don't want to lose your position because the fan base is, you know, ranting, saying we want better football. I will make note, though, now we have 27 schools that make at least $100 million in annual revenue from their athletic department. Now, there's no mention of the expenses, and many times the expenses equal the revenues, but that just shows how big and commercialized athletic departments are, NCAA Division I.
And there again is an important point in there, that with big-time college sports, certainly seeing this in basketball with UNC and Duke, football to an extent as well, and seeing it in a whole bunch of different programs, like as much as we talk about and lament the fact that we're throwing millions of dollars at it, it does end up actually making money for the school as a whole. And I personally don't know Jimbo Fisher. I have absolutely nothing against the guy. If he can figure out a way to make millions of dollars, you know, more power to him. The question that I have is, I think ultimately sort of underlying all this is the fact that, and I think this is kind of a fairly, I think I can safely assume that I'm on solid ground on saying this, that whenever you have an industry like this or any industry where there's a lot of money flying around, especially when there's this huge influx and rapid increase in the amount of money flying around, you end up with corruption. You end up with people taking advantage of the system. You end up with people getting defrauded. You end up with a situation where people are taking advantage of other people in order to make a quick buck. And there have been plenty of examples of that in the world of big-time college football and college basketball. So is there a way to, without figuring out a way to turn the train onto another track and avoid having a lot of money in big-time college sports, which is going to be really difficult to do, assuming that we are going to have a lot of money in college sports, is there a way to avoid the corruption and the fraud and people taking advantage of each other?
I don't think there's a way to avoid it, but what you're talking about is regulation.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, arguably, people will say that the NCAA is trying to regulate itself. It has a very small enforcement body compared to the greater number of participants and administrators. And also you have the challenges of certain programs and certain conferences. Really, there is no subpoena power, so they choose not to indulge or participate in an open, fully transparent way in terms of whether or not they are actually exploiting or corrupting students. So then we turn to the government. That is our big regulator. And, for example, what has happened recently with the FBI getting involved, is that what it's going to take? There are some people who say just let it happen. The market will correct itself, so to speak. If you're worth, you know, $5 million, then so be it. And if there's corruption that takes place, then that's up to each individual campus and the academic leaders to monitor that and to supervise it. But I believe with these type of numbers that are floating around, I don't believe it will stop. There is, you know, human nature for survival, and then there's greed that takes place. So it's always going to be just a very, very open, wild, wild west, so to speak, with the sheriff running around trying to control and monitor, or I'll use the analogy of the whack-a-mole, where people are going to get, you know, popped on the hand or slapped on the wrist or even shut down with death penalty type legislation. But still, just the money is just so big and so attractive. It's seemingly become a drug.
Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman again, and Deb, before we let you go, I know you were on the air on Monday with Max Orr talking about this, but remind people in case they didn't hear the forum that's coming up tonight on NFL protests at the Friday Center, what it's going to entail.
Thank you. Absolutely. For those going to the game tonight, the men's game, we're going to have a wonderful engagement at the Friday Center at 6 o'clock, and we want to talk about and explore more the entire NFL protest. Colin Kaepernick, former quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers, took a knee, and that whole movement in terms of the injustice against African-Americans, in particular African-American men, is stronger than ever. And it still is in the news because the fundamental debate around whether or not we are actually fulfilling the values of America, whether or not we really have equal justice, and whether or not we are really embracing all Americans still requires conversation and policy change. So we're going to examine that. I've got three other colleagues joining me on the panel tonight, but it should be a great time, and you can still catch the shuttle bus to the Smith Center to see the game tonight.
Dr. Deb Stroman, thank you so much.
Thank you.